At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The former leader of a Fort Worth Baptist seminary says he's decided not to deliver a keynote sermon at next week's Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting in Dallas. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported Paige Patterson's withdrawal. He said in a statement he does not want to detract from the meeting. Patterson was fired last night by the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary because of how he handled sexual abuse allegations. In the Star-Telegram report, Patterson takes exception to accusations that he knowingly ignored or failed to follow protocols in cases of reported abuse. Last month, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions doubled down on the Trump administration efforts to prosecute all cases of illegal entry into the United States. These criminal prosecutions are why hundreds of kids and parents are being separated at the southwest border. As parents wait for court dates in criminal detention facilities, their children are placed in shelters across the country. In West Texas, three Guatemalan women are facing deportation. As Marfa Public Radio's Sally Beauvais reports, they aren't sure if or when they'll be reunited with their kids.
In a small federal courtroom in Alpine, Texas, three Guatemalan women sit side by side in handcuffs and orange jumpsuits. They're young, in their mid-20s, and immigration officials separated them from their children at the border about 90 miles south nearly a month ago. Public defender Chris Carlin represented the women in court.
There is no guarantee that those kids will be reunited with them.
The morning of the trial, Carlin and his team were finally able to officially locate the women's sons. Two of them are 9 years old, and one is 8. They're at a shelter in Manhattan that's contracted by the Division of Health and Human Services that's responsible for sheltering undocumented kids. In emailed statements, Border Patrol officials say families separated at the border will be reunited during the deportation process. But Carlin has his doubts.
There is nothing in the immigration files of those women to show that they ever actually came to the United States with the child.
He's worried the kids' paper trail won't be sufficient to link them to their mothers. Carlin also says the women don't have legal addresses in Guatemala, and they could be hard to locate if deported without their kids. The fact that they crossed with children had little bearing on the trial in Alpine. It was a criminal trial, only meant to determine whether the women crossed into the U.S. illegally, which is a federal misdemeanor they were eventually found guilty of.
A petty misdemeanor is the federal equivalent of a parking ticket, and the consequences of a parking ticket should not be that you lose your child.
From October 2017 through May of this year, 835 unaccompanied children and 543 families were apprehended in the Big Bend sector. Sources with the local Border Patrol say they arrest the vast majority of families that cross near the official port of entry in the town of Presidio, not out in the more remote, less detectable parts of the region. Presidio Mayor John Ferguson has seen this in action.
They cross in groups, and you're always going to have some adults and children.
He says running into people out in the open who've crossed is a regular part of life in Presidio right now.
If you come upon them, they're almost like they're waiting for the Border Patrol to come and take them.
El Paso-based immigration attorney Melissa Lopez says there's confusion among her clients about what will happen to them when they arrive in the United States. Some try to take the legal route and file for asylum at official entry points. Others think they have a better chance of staying in the U.S. if they're picked up by immigration officials near the border. Most, she says, are seeking asylum.
You know, we've repeatedly heard mothers say, you know, if their children remain in Central America, they face near certain death. And while coming to the United States can be very dangerous, you know, if their children make it, they have a chance for a future.
Back in court in Alpine, after hearing one woman's testimony of fleeing violence in Guatemala, the judge says he can't imagine how difficult the women's lives are, and there's nothing he can say to make them better. The women are now in the custody of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It's unclear when they'll be reunited with their children. In Alpine, I'm Sally Beauvais.
The Fine Arts Theater in Denton is a classic movie palace. It sits on the city square, mostly abandoned since a fire in the 1980s. In our weekly State of the Arts conversation, Art and Seek's Ann Bothwell talks with Denton artist Martin Isles and Jason Reimer of Texas Theater in Dallas about new plans to bring this theater back to life.
The Fine Arts Theater has been closed since 1982, yet many people in Denton feel really connected to it, and they've, you know, worried what would become of it. Martin Isles, what's so special about this place?
Well, I think anytime you have a building that's well over 80 years old, there's people that are going to have an attachment to it. If that building is an entertainment venue and you have generations of people going in and experiencing and being entertained by movies, then there's going to be a special connection there. And to me, that's almost like a sacred space.
Jason?
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think the only thing I would add to it is the rarity of those spaces is what's drawing people back to them. You can build a really cool theater now. There's nothing wrong with that either. But you can't build these spaces, the history that's in them and the kind of mystical vibe that is there. It's impossible to replicate it.
Let's talk about the history of this place. It started in 1877 as an opera house. Do you know anything about what it looked like then?
Well, actually, it started out as a mortuary service.
And, really?
And apparently building coffins and things like that. Then it became an opera house. But there are not a whole lot of images of the building. I'm currently culling through all of that material to find the best things that I can.
Then there was W. Scott Dunn. He was responsible for the Texas Theater in Oak Cliff and for the Fine Arts in Denton and several others around the state. How does the Fine Arts compare to those?
Part of the thing that's interesting about these theaters when you kind of dig around into that culture is that being different and looking different was a huge part of the marketing scheme. The one in Denton, the Fine Arts Theater, I would consider it kind of minimalist. They're not as common to see those.
Martin, talk a little bit about how you came into this project.
I've been a resident of Denton since on and off since 1976. I actually went and saw Young Frankenstein in that movie, in that theater with my parents. And I lived on the square for almost 20 years in two different buildings. So I would constantly see that theater outside and lament its lack of use as a theater. And so my connection to it is serious. It's been an ongoing conversation that Jason and I have had for a long time. And when the possibility of his group being a part of that theater and seeing it revived was being seriously talked about, it's something I couldn't ignore.
Jason, you are part of the team that reopened the Texas Theater in Oak Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
How will the Fine Arts Theater and what gets programmed there differ from the Texas Theater and what happens there?
It's really great for small distributors and filmmakers that we can now play them in two different places that are 40 miles roughly apart. That's a huge advantage. At the same time, the young people and the filmmakers and the active people that are involved in the community there are going to use the theater for their own purposes, and I have no way to predict that.
What would an average week at this theater look like?
I would imagine maybe on Saturday night, an industrial band playing music to an Italian horror film. On Sunday, an African-American church renting the space and using it. On Monday, an experimental animation group having meetings. On Tuesday, exchange students from India screening a Bollywood film. On Wednesday, a country and western band from Sanger playing.
It sounds more like a community center than a movie theater.
Well, the key to that is exactly that. Like anyone that's worried about what we're programming, there's not a chance we're not going to bump into something you like. It just is the way it works.
It'll take about 2 years to renovate the theater. Have you already started thinking about opening night?
Well, we kind of have an idea about revisiting the past, the very first movie that premiered there in 1935, which is We're in the Money. It's a comedy.
Martin looked it up and they had a kind of harvest festival in front of the theater that I think would be appropriate. If we can convince the city to let us close down the square for a night.
And you know, this is all working ideas. It'll probably get much more elaborate, I think.
Van Halen is going to reform.
Yes, fireworks, live horses running around the square.
Martin Isles, Jason Reimer, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Partly cloudy skies in store for us tonight. Should be a low around 77 later on. And tomorrow, sunny with high near 96. At 6:30, this is KERA News.